Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. This is J.R. Moore with the second hour of our show here on Friday morning, March 25th, year of our Lord, 2011. Our guest this hour is Mr. John DiNardo. John is a science teacher. He's got a college degree that allows him to teach science, which is more than I can say for myself. I'm just a homicide detective. John is, and I talked earlier this week about the problem with nuclear power plants, and especially ones that might be sitting on faults, seismic faults, where they could be subject to earthquakes. And we visited and talked and came up with a plan. John is going to be talking about to hopefully shut down a plant in New York State that is sitting on a earthquake fault line. And he feels is certainly very much at risk. And I agree with him, seeing the events that we're seeing in Japan right now. John DiNardo, good morning. How are you, sir? Good
morning, John. Thank you for inviting me.
Okay. Let's begin at the beginning. You've expressed your very heartfelt concern, which I certainly understand, about nuclear power plants being at risk, especially if they're on or near a fault line. And there's one in particular in New York that you're extremely concerned about. Tell us about that and why you're concerned.
That nuclear power plant is the Indian Point power plant. I believe they have three reactors. It's about 24 miles north of New York City, and it has been actually had violations of the nuclear code over the years. I believe there has been leakage from that plant. But what has been found recently by the Columbia University Seismological Center is that those nuclear reactors are built upon intersecting earthquake fault lines. They did not know this at the time it was constructed some 40 years ago. And so now this seismological center has issued a report, an urgent alert, back in 2008, stating that this is a grave danger to the community. And
this brings up a couple of things. First of all, the expected useful life of one of these plants, the type that we're talking about here, is how long before they would be mothballed and taken out of service?
I have no idea, but what I've heard on television reports is that these reactors were built 40 years ago when the codes and specifications were much more lenient than they are today, because they're learning more about the greater dangers of the earthquake, of having a nuclear reactor, actually, and also of the earthquake.
Well, I know any
probably growing old. And I'm sorry.
Well, any power plant of that nature would have, when they're initially building it, they would have an expected useful life before it would be no longer useful and have to be mothballed and do whatever they do to decommission a nuclear power plant. I think it's very important, John, that you find out that information in your quest to accomplish your goal, but please continue.
Okay. Yeah, these reactors are aging. This is what I got from the MSNBC TV reports from the New York TV stations, that the reactors are aging, and that, in fact, they had a report in this New York City TV report. They stated that the earthquake levels, the threshold of earthquake with withstanding threshold, was 6.2 on the Richter scale. That was the intended magnitude of earthquakes.
Okay.
That would
before
cause
we go any further, hold on.
Plant.
Hold on. This is real important. I think you and I have talked about this, but you may not have incorporated it in your work. Now, 40 years ago, the Richter scale was different than the Richter scale they're using now.
Right.
Are you aware of that?
Yes, so I've been aware of that for several years, yes.
Well, there are certain authorities, now regulatory authorities in New York State, that may not have the awareness you and I have, that the Richter scale has been downgraded, and that if there's a 6.1, tomorrow, in that area, the New York State authorities would say, oh boy, I'm sure glad it wasn't a 6.2, when in reality, it's a 6.1 on the original Richter scale would be a 7.1. A thousand times stronger.
Right.
And if your authorities in New York State are not aware of this, they're breathing a sigh of relief should actually be, oh my God, you know, call the fire department.
That's right. And the scientists, I'm amazed at how ignorant most scientists are about that secret change that was made in the Richter scale some 20 years ago or longer.
It was right at Charles F. Richter died in 1984, and within a year of his death, they reduced the Richter scale by one full number value, which is 1,000%.
Right. So you're right. When you consider the danger involved in the lack of knowledge, if you are living at a danger threshold and you don't know it, then the threat of disaster is ever greater. That precludes or prevents people from making the decisions they need to overcome that danger.
That's
so
the highest
now
level.
We're living in danger. We don't know it.
You're absolutely right. Not only the people within a 50-mile radius of the plant, but the top regulatory officials in the state of New York, most likely the majority of them are ignorant to what you and I are talking about, aren't they?
That's right. And it's what's going to happen is these people generally don't listen, but we're going to try to organize the grassroots citizens organizations acting independently. You know, you asked me to devise a plan of awakening the people and pressing and mobilizing political power to stop, shut down these plants. And the thought that came to mind is, this is a war. It's not a war to kill people. It is a war to alert people. And in any war, you need a military force of diverse forces. You need an Air Force, a Navy, an Army. You need recruiters. You need cooks and bakers. You need logistics. So in this war for enlightenment, we have many people, and many people can take on different tasks. Some people can contact environmental organizations, because we know environmentally oriented people are much more sensitive to these issues, dangers to their health, than ordinary people. So there are many environmental groups that we can find on the internet to get involved with.
We got a break here, John. Hold on, everybody. Stay tuned. The call number is 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
John Moore is taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is Jared Moore. It's Friday, the 25th. John DiNardo and I are talking about his plan to create a grassroots organization to shut down the Indian Point nuclear power plant. Go ahead, John.
Environmental groups are the people that are typically most sensitive to health hazards. These people are the kind of that you would want to contact first. They would readily become allies with you. You can find many environmental groups on the internet. The internet is a wonderful directory of contacts for organizations and people. And that's what we have to do. That's one thing that many of us volunteers can begin doing. And incidentally, I want to give out my email address so that
please do.
We
please
can
do.
Actually
and
organize.
Whatever, any contact information you want to give out, John, what is your email address?
It is planetxnow@yahoo.com. PlanetXNow@yahoo.com.
Okay. Outstanding. Is there any other contact information you want to give out?
That's probably good enough. This way I can just
right now. Okay.
Diligently check my email and get in touch with these people and try to organize groups. So we all can work independently, but we can also work in parallel, coherently. And that's the way, if you get involved in one united force, what happens is people, the devils that be, the powers that be, will get in there and try to compromise that power structure because there's one target at the top of the pyramid that they can ambush. But when you have an organization that is at the grassroots and many people are working in parallel, there's just too many of us mosquitoes to swat at one time.
Well, actually, that's the strength of the Tea Party, is there's no central leadership, and it just drives the powers that be bonkers, because there's no single leader to swat at and to take down. It's all decentralized, and that's a very good organizing strategy, John.
Yes, and I think we've got a tremendous potential for growth, because, as you know, when danger emerges in a person's backyard, that person suddenly becomes an activist, whereas he may never have become an activist when there was a danger distant from his own home. But now we have people in the New York area, every one of whom is vulnerable to this horrible death, slow death by radioactive fallout. We see it happening in Japan. It is no longer something to be imagined in the future. It's a reality. We see it every day. People wandering about aimlessly, hopelessly dying of radiation poisoning. So we know that it happened with a nuclear reactor in Japan that was not even located atop a fault zone, but it was very near a fault off the coast. And a resultant tsunami from that earthquake is what wiped out the electrical power in those plants and caused everything to fail. Well, you can expect an even more likely failure of the Indian Point nuclear reactor, because it is built on the top of intersecting earthquake fault lines. That plant is going to fracture, and not only will it lose power, but the containment facility for the nuclear fuel rods and the waste products are going to be broken open. It's potentially an even greater disaster than the Fukushima plant in Japan. So we have a lot of people who are typically TV watchers, you know, independent. They don't want to isolate it. They care not to get involved in community affairs. All of these people are going to be highly aroused and highly active. So we got great potential. All we have to do is start reaching them. And we can do that. And another thing is the radio stations. People contact go on the internet, find out the radio stations in the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut area. Start emailing these radio stations. I have a report. This report that I have composed, I believe, is the most convincing. If you just take my report and forward the link, what you have to do is email one little link.
How can people get your report, John?
Well, actually, you know, I could send it to you, John, and perhaps if you put it on your website, and also I'm going to give it to Sheldon Day for his website, too.
Yeah, Sheldon could get it posted quicker than I can. He does his own posting. I don't.
Okay, this would be I'm sorry. This would be it would be at the Light of Day radio show. I know it's a long name. The Light of Day radio show.com.
Right.
Just go to that website. At the very top of the page, you'll see this big Planet X logo. Just click on the Planet X logo, and that'll take you to a page. It takes a few seconds to load because there's a lot of information on there. So just go to thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on the Planet X logo, and it'll take you to the Planet X page. And I'll ask Sheldon to post that link to my article. In my article, what I do is I explain that
Hold that thought. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, no music yet. I'm sorry. I thought I heard music.
We have in that article, I explained that we have a celestial body that is estimated by NASA 27 years ago, before they were muzzled, to be a brown dwarf star.
There's some music.
Okay.
I was a minute early. Now hold that thought, John. Call number is 800-313-9443. We'll be right back. We're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is Friday, the 25th day of March. Freeze Dry Guy does have a March special. It's not freeze dried food, it's dehydrated food. Dehydrated non fat dry milk, dehydrated cheese blend, dehydrated chopped onions, and dehydrated diced sweet potatoes. You get one case, you get 5% off your entire order. Two cases, 8% off your entire order. Three cases, 12% off your entire order. Keep in mind, this food is in stock, ready for delivery. In addition, he's offering 15% back in survival bucks. That's money you get to spend on more items, more preparedness items and food, on his grab-and-go buckets, which are prepacked plastic buckets full of breakfast and entree units, ranging from a 15-day supply to a 3-month supply, 15% off. His toll-free number on the left coast is 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. His website is freezedryguy.com, and there's a link for my website, thelibertyman.com, and that is my website, thelibertyman.com. Keep in mind, I do private consultations, both corporate and family private preparedness consultations. John, before the break, you were talking about the 10th planet, and please continue.
Okay, when you go to this article that is posted at thelightofdayradioshow.com and you click on the Planet X logo at the top of the page, that will take you to the link for the article that I composed, which I urge people to distribute on this campaign to shut down nuclear reactors. You'll see in this article, embodied in the article, is the actual link to the New York Times January 30th report on Planet X. I went to my library, photocopied the actual article, and put the photocopy of the article inside this link of my article.
January 30th,
1983, I have the article right in front of me. I'll read a bit of it. The New York Times, Sunday, January 30th, 1983, title, Clues Get Warm in the Search for Planet X, by John Noble Wilford. Quote, something out there beyond the farthest reaches of the known solar system seems to be tugging at Uranus and Neptune. Some gravitational force keeps perturbing the two giant planets, causing irregularities in their orbits. The force suggests a presence far away and unseen, a large object that may be the long-sought planet X. Notice that they say long-sought, and they're going to describe that. Evidence assembled in recent years has led several groups of astronomers to renew the search for the 10th planet. They are devoting more time to visual observations with the 200-inch telescope at Mount Palomar in California. They are tracking two Pioneer spacecraft now approaching the orbit of distant Pluto to see if variations in their trajectories provide clues to the source of the mysterious force. And they are hoping that a satellite-borne telescope launched just last week will detect heat signatures from the planet or whatever it is out there. The infrared astronomical satellite was boosted into a 560-mile high polar orbit Tuesday night from Vandenberg Air Force Base, California. It represents an $80 million venture by the United States, Britain, and the Netherlands. In the next 6 or 7 months, the telescope is expected to conduct a wide-ranging survey of nearly all the sky, detecting sources not of ordinary light, but of infrared radiation, which is invisible to the human eye and largely absorbed by the atmosphere. Scientists thus hope that the new telescope will chart thousands of infrared-emitting objects that have gone undetected, stars, interstellar clouds, asteroids, and with any luck, that object that pulls at Uranus and Neptune. The last time a serious search of the skies was made, it led to the discovery in 1930 of Pluto, the 9th planet. But the story begins more than a century before that, after the discovery of Uranus in 1781 by the English astronomer and musician William Herschel. Until then, the planetary system seemed to end with Saturn. As astronomers observed Uranus, noting irregularities in its orbital path, many speculated that they were witnessing the gravitational pull of an unknown planet. So began the first planetary search based on astronomers' predictions, which ended in the 1840s, with the discovery of Neptune almost simultaneously by English, French, and German astronomers. But Neptune was not massive enough to account entirely for the orbital behavior of Uranus. Indeed, Neptune itself seemed to be affected by a still more remote planet. in the late 19th century, two American astronomers, William Pickering and Percival Lowell, predicted the size and approximate location of this trans-Neptunian body, which Lowell called Planet X. This was 110 years ago.
Right.
They named it. Years later, Pluto was detected by Clyde Tombaugh working at Lowell's observatory in Arizona. Several astronomers, however, suspected that Pluto might not be the Planet X of prediction. Subsequent observations proved them right. Pluto was too small to change the orbits of Uranus and Neptune. Recent calculations by the United States Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas C. Van Flandern, an astronomer at the observatory, says could be explained by, quote, a single undiscovered planet, unquote. He and a colleague, Dr. Robert S. Harrington, now deceased, and we'll talk about that later, he and a colleague, Dr. Robert S. Harrington, calculate that the 10th planet should be 2 to 5 times more massive than Earth and have a highly elliptical orbit that takes it some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto, hardly next door, but still within the gravitational influence of our sun. That is a key statement right there. It's
right,
within the
right.
gravitational influence of the sun. And my comment is this. They stated this. This is NASA giving their report to the New York Times. If it's within the gravitational influence of our sun, you know what is going to happen. It's going to be sucked into our sun. It's the same principle, the very same principle of gravity, as if you were to hold a rock in your outstretched hand and release that rock. It must fall to the ground. Body A must be gravitationally attracted to body B. It is inexorable. And that is what they told us right here. They said it is still within the gravitational influence of the sun. That is so important. Continuing on. Some astronomers have reacted cautiously to 10th planet predictions. They remember the long, futile quest for the planet Vulcan inside the orbit of Mercury. Vulcan, it turned out, did not exist. They wonder why such a large object as a 10th planet escaped the exhaustive survey by Mr. Tombaugh, who is sure it is not in the two-thirds of the sky which he examined. But according to Dr. Ray T. Reynolds of the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California, other astronomers, quote, are so sure of the 10th planet, they think there's nothing left but to name it, unquote. At a scientific meeting last summer, 10th planet partisans tended to prevail. Alternative explanations for the outer planet perturbations were offered. That something out there, some scientists said, might be an unseen black hole or a neutron star passing through the sun's vicinity. Defenders of the 10th planet parried that suggestion. But they said material falling into the gravitational field of a black hole, the remains of a very massive star after its complete gravitational collapse, should give off detectable X-rays, but no X-rays have been detected. A neutron star, a less massive star that has collapsed to a highly dense state, should affect the courses of comets, they said, yet no such changes have been observed. More credence was given to the hypothesis that a, quote, brown dwarf star, unquote, accounts for this mysterious gravitational force. This is the informal name astronomers give to celestial bodies that were not massive enough for the thermonuclear furnaces to ignite. Perhaps like the huge planet Jupiter, they just missed being self-illuminating stars. Most stars are paired, so it is not unreasonable to suggest that the sun has a dim companion. My comment is that it's been already speculated by astronomers that that dim sun, that dead sun, is about 50 billion miles or more out into deep space. Continuing on, moreover, a brown dwarf star in the neighborhood might not reflect enough light to be seen far away, said Dr. John Anderson of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. Its gravitational forces, the brown dwarf star, its gravitational forces should produce energy detectable by the infrared astronomical satellite. Whatever the mysterious force, be it a brown dwarf or a large planet, Dr. Anderson said he was, quote, quite optimistic that the infrared telescope might find it and that the Pioneer spacecraft could supply an estimate of this object's mass. So there you go. The government has known about this. They put out a report through NASA because these NASA scientists were very excited.
They were
about
excited
this whole
proud
project.
Of what they found, yes.
Exactly. I mean, if you were
and
astronomer...
And the memo hadn't come out yet to shut up if you want to live.
That's exactly right, John. The National Security Agency had not yet muzzled them because they were not really on the ball enough to figure out what was going on.
And the significance of it. It was about 1979 that they confirmed this was real privately. These reports came out in 83. In fact, there was another chapter in a mainstream encyclopedia that was published at the same time, wasn't there?
Yes, it was a new invention, new science and invention encyclopedia. Mark Hazelwood published the actual page from that new science and invention encyclopedia, the 1987 edition. I have it in Mark Hazelwood's book that shows the diagram of the 10th planet in between the two suns, our sun and the distant sun. And where did the new science and invention encyclopedia get this information? They didn't just make it up. They got it from NASA.
Of course it
is. Because NASA was the only source with this information.
Now, I like your smoking gun of the New York Times article. In addition, the interview with Dr. Harrington, the supervising astronomer of the United States Naval Observatory, being interviewed in his office at the United States Naval Observatory, talking about the 10th planet as scientific fact, not scientific speculation. I regard that as one of the strongest smoking guns, don't you, John?
Yes, definitely. Zechariah Sitchin, the author of the book, the famous book, The 12th Planet, went into Dr. Harrington's office and interviewed him, and Dr. Harrington said, quote, "It's a nice, good planet."
Right.
But I tell you something, though, John. We have so much evidence to show that Dr. Harrington was trying to downplay the size of this planet because I believe he was told, and he himself realized, that this could cause public panic if they were released, if the actual size of it was released. Just think about this contradiction in information. Dr. Harrington said in this article that he believed the mass of this body was 2 to 5 times that of Earth. That's got to be a gross underestimation, because right here they say in the article several times that Harrington and all the rest of the astronomers, most of them, believe that this is a brown dwarf star. Now, when you look up the definition of a brown dwarf star, and I've looked it up, the puniest brown dwarf star is about 3 Jupiter masses. One Jupiter, look it up, and you'll find out that one Jupiter mass is 318 Earth masses. So a puny brown dwarf star of 3 Jupiter masses would be approaching 1,000 Earth masses.
No wonder they're building concrete bunkers.
Yes, because we know by Sir Isaac Newton's universal law of gravitation, if you look at the principle, this law states that the magnitude of gravitational force between two bodies is directly proportional to the mass of body A multiplied by the mass of body B. So if either of the two factors in that term of mass A times mass B, either one of those factors increases, then the gravitational force of attraction also increases. But what makes it even more worrisome is that in that universal law of gravitation by Sir Isaac Newton, it states that the magnitude of the gravitational force of attraction increases as the inverse square of the distance between the two masses. And that means, as let's say we start with two bodies, planet X and a brown dwarf star, they're a billion miles away, okay?
Right.
Whatever that gravitational force of attraction is determined by the mass of planet X, the mass of our sun, and the distance of 1 billion miles. That's all factored into this formula. And as a result, the result of that formula gives you a particular magnitude of gravitational attraction between the two bodies. Now, let's say the distance between them decreases to 1/2 billion. One half of the original distance. Instead of a billion miles, it's now a half a billion miles away. What happens to the gravitational force of attraction? You would think, oh, well, it must increase, it must double, but it doesn't. It increases fourfold. You cut the distance in half, increases the magnitude of force, increases fourfold. Cut the distance into one-third, the magnitude of the force of attraction between them increases by nine times. Ninefold. Decreased the distance to one-fifth of a billion miles. From 1 billion miles to one-fifth of a billion miles. The gravitational force of attraction increases by 25 times. Multiply that force by 25. So you can see it's increasing. The gravitational pull of the Sun to planet X is increasing exponentially. Right. Now, by Newton's second law of motion, it states that the acceleration of a body is directly proportional to the force applied to that body. So as that gravitational pull of the Sun on planet X, pulling in planet X like a fisherman reeling in a huge catch on his line, that gravitational force doubles, quadruples, quintuples. Likewise, the acceleration of planet X increases by the same proportion.
Pretty amazing.
Quadruples, 25 times. And so what you have is this body is accelerating like an 18-wheeler coming down Arizona superhighway, coming right at you. You're looking down, and it's miles away, and it looks like just a tiny little speck in the Roadrunner cartoons, if you've ever seen those. The coyote is looking down this superhighway, and it just looks like a little speck, and then all of a sudden it just grows enormously, and you just can't jump out of the way in time, and the Roadrunner gets flattened by this 18-wheeler.
Right.
That's what we have to try to dodge.
John, I was told by one of my contacts last night, I know you're aware, as many of our listeners, about the Hopi Elders going to the United Nations in the early 50s to warn us about this. Well, I got an update on that. When we get back, we'll talk about the Hopi Elders. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. We're back. This is J.R. Moore. It's Friday the 25th. Anyway, John, the Hopi Elders went to the United Nations in 1959 to warn the world about what you and I are talking about this morning. It turns out they also made an attempt to approach the League of Nations. I didn't know this until last night. And they were unsuccessful in approaching the League of Nations back between World War II and World War I. So I found that kind of fascinating. It turns out that most, if not all, of the indigenous people to North America have prophecies similar to the Hopi prophecy. I was under the opinion that they were the only ones, but I'm in touch with the Western Cherokee Nation, and I've been told that they have some very similar prophecies. And we would all be well advised to pay heed, wouldn't we?
Definitely. I mean, there are so many sources around the world that have warned us of this. There are, you know, I should have brought my book. It's in the other room, but I can read to you quotes from some of the indigenous people who suffered the catastrophic events of the very last passage of Planet X into our solar system. You see, this as John has probably described to your listeners, it comes in like clockwork. Because this Planet X, this brown dwarf star, is on a cometary orbit, and comets, we know, are celestial pendula.
Right.
A pendulum, the period of a pendulum can be predicted. It's regular. It's predictable.
Right. Right.
And on your grandfather's clock, you can measure the period it takes for that pendulum to swing from one end back to the other and then back again where it began. That's one complete cycle. The period of this celestial pendulum on a cometary orbit, brown dwarf star on a cometary orbit, its period is 36.5 centuries. We know that from anecdotal information from several past cyclical incursions into our solar
system. John, I need to interrupt you here. We're almost out of time. Let's get your email address out there so people can get this information, and Sheldon's website also.
Okay, please email me at planetxnow@yahoo.com, planetxnow@yahoo.com, and then go to thelightofdayradioshow.com. Click on the big Planet X logo, and it'll take you to the Planet X page where you can get that article to circulate to all the people who want to stop this nuclear reactor. In the article, you can see the photocopy of the New York Times article that I just read.
Okay. You've taken on quite a challenge here to shut down a nuclear power plant. I think the best thing you got going for you is it's probably near the end of its useful life anyway.
And also another good thing is that lots of people with power are also concerned. People who have political power, they live right near it.
They
try to kill me. They would try to kill me for getting this out, but maybe they want me to get it out because so they can survive too.
They have David Letterman. And they live there also, so that's a real good thing that certainly works to your benefit. I don't want the music to cut us off here, John. We got about less than 2 minutes left. I want to thank you for taking some time this morning to visit with us and passing on its very important information. I'll be in touch privately, John, and we'll do this again sometime in the near future.
Thanks so much for hosting me, John.
Thank you. We appreciate it. John DiNardo, a scientist, a man who's on a mission to do what he's got to do. That's it for today. You all be safe out there. Have a great weekend. Buy lots of ammunition, and God bless America.
The next round.